We'll start today with the set aside of prayer. And for those on the podcast, it's July 2021. We're live, been live now for several months. God, please set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Especially help me let go of all my old ideas so I can live on your truth. Heavenly Father, help me carry your message this morning. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, we've restarted the big book the last, four meetings. We did two meetings on the cover and the first pages and the foreword, and now we're in Doctor's Opinion. And my book is ready, not just on hospice, but I think it's in the final stages of, the pages are actually falling out now. But I hate to let go of it, you know how we are. So I may have to get a new book, at least I've outlasted the book, right? And we covered last week, Wednesday, the beginning of A Vision for You. And I'll just review briefly. People make fun of when I review, but when you teach, you need to put the lesson in perspective. And so they start out the instructions for recovery from a hopeless condition of mind and body with the doctor's opinion. And the doctor's opinion is a medical estimate of the plan of recovery described in the book. And so he's going to give convincing testimony on what he thinks of the book. And he writes in the page XX5 that someone came in 1934, that was Bill W., and he considered him hopeless. And we talked about what makes someone hopeless, and it makes you're hopeless if only a spiritual experience will conquer your situation. If you have a plan that'll work, then you're not, and you can do it, and you can recover, then that's fine if it's your plan. But if not, you might try this. And they talked about how he had had found the means of recovery, and he took it to other people, and he saw other people recover. And then he says these facts at the bottom of that page are of real importance, because prior to this, we had no help. I think the situation still today. We have a lot of treatment centers, but I don't know that they've done a study on how successful they are. When I gave a cancer treatment, they had rigorous studies to show its effectiveness. Now, that changed over the years. I'll just blather for a minute. When I started 40 years ago, if a drug had less than a 20% response rate, then they really didn't study it further. And they looked for things that had a higher response or duration of response. Nowadays, if you can get a 3-month improvement in survival, you can get an injection that costs $15,000 a month, and they advertise it on TV. So it's changed a lot. But the treatment centers today, and I'm not downing or anything, or the treatment plans and the intensive outpatient, I don't see any studies that shows how successful they are. And then they say, well, we're not successful because this is the disease. So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And I don't think AA is any less or more successful than treatment centers. Unless someone finds the plan in this book, I believe, and does it, I don't know that they'll recover. I know it's helped me. It says you may rely absolutely on anything they say about themselves. And I was listening to the book of Acts today, and it's a written testimony of what the apostles did. And I don't know how well this is working out for everybody, but it says, if you suffered alcoholic torture, Okay. You have to stop hitting the thing. It says we suffered alcoholic torture, and the body is as abnormal as the mind. And the problem with our mind was that we could not control our drinking because we were maladjusted to life. And so that we were maladjusted because we had the wrong director. We were in full flight from reality, which is God's truth. And we were outright mental defectives because we believed what we thought. And then he talks about the allergy, and they say this is of paramount importance, and it explains a lot of things. So then the doctor writes, and we just covered this first two paragraphs last Wednesday. He says that this subject in this book is paramount importance to those afflicted with alcoholic addiction. Now, I think this is really important because there's always been this controversy between addicts and alcoholics, which I've never understood. And when I first came to AA, the alcoholics looked down on the addicts. And I don't know why. And Linda may remember that too. There was all this controversy. Can an addict come? An addict's going to ruin the meeting. Well, that never made sense to me because addiction is something that you are dependent on to change the way you feel and or behavior. Like, I'm addicted to my exercise bike, but that hasn't made my life unmanageable yet. Maybe, I don't know, ask my wife. So we're addicted to alcohol to relieve the way we feel. And people are addicted to food or sex or shopping or eating, and it changes the way they feel. And so the only difference between an alcoholic and a drug addict, according to Dr. Paul, who wrote Acceptance of the Answer, is an alcoholic can't drink and can't use drugs, and an addict can't use drugs and can't drink. Now, some people say, well, that's not true for me. But people who go back, who are alcoholics and start on drugs, they'll get back to alcohol pretty quickly because they're trying to find what will relieve their pain, their spiritual illness. And anything that will relieve it, you become dependent upon. And so that's one of our problems, which we're going to read about today. He says he had a sense of satisfaction about the subject covered masterly detail in these pages. He says, we have realized for a long time that some form of moral psychology was of urgent importance to alcoholics. It wasn't any medicine. And moral psychology was treating the soul through a change of action, something that the soul could do so it would change the way they reacted to the thing. But they couldn't do it. They didn't have powers. It says, we were not well equipped to apply the powers of good that lie outside our synthetic knowledge. And they're talking about the world that they can see. So they knew that there was something needed to change these individuals that was beyond their power. So when a doctor admits this, that's pretty powerful. And doctors today send everybody to AA because they don't know what to do with us, and that's okay. But then we have to be prepared to reach out and help people who come here who are dying. And this book is for people who are dying. If you don't think you're dying and you're having a bad day and you're sent to AA by the court and this and that, you probably won't do the steps. Probably not. You may. Who knows? But this book was written for desperate people, for people who had a hopeless condition of mind and body. Now, They may not have known that, so the big book takes the doctor's opinion in the first 43 pages to convince you when you're reading this that you have a hopeless condition of mind and body. So that's why it's important to read each statement in the first person and look at it and see if it's true for you. And a lot of people don't do that. They read the book and they say, well, that's true for them, but it may not be true for me. And so he He said that this man was allowed to tell his story to other patients here, and he consented. And then he followed through, and it was amazing, the results. He says the unselfishness of these men, if we come to know them, and that's what we have to remember in AA. Are we being unselfish? Are we getting back at self? Are we judging each other? Are we setting up rules? The entire absence of profit motive and their community spirit is indeed inspiring to one who has labored long and wearily in this alcoholic field. I don't know, I thought cancer medicine was difficult and at times very sad, but a lot of the patients did well and most of them recovered. But if I treated alcoholism, that would have been really depressing, because the results are really, really, and not only depressing, because you see a solution that people won't want to do. Now, I had no trouble when I came in the room and the person couldn't breathe and their oxygen was like 60% and they were 28 and they were dying from Hodgkin's disease and a huge mass in their chest. And I said, we need to give you chemotherapy tonight. And they'd say, great. They wouldn't say, well, I'm going to think about it. I'll call you next week. You know, that never happened. And I can think of that lady, and then she went on to get married and have children, and I went to her wedding. It says, these people believe in themselves and still more in the power, notice the capital P still, which pulls chronic alcoholics from the gates of death. See, that's what they were writing this book. People who are facing the gates of death, finding a power which pulls them back. So we're going in one direction and the power pulls me back. Isn't that what God does when you want to drink? It says, no, Michael, you're headed towards the gates of death. Let's go a different direction. You don't want to stop there. You don't want to think about it. I don't even think about it anymore, but it could happen today. I hope not. It says an alcoholic should be freed from his physical craving for liquor. And we're going to talk about what the craving is. And this usually requires hospitalization. In fact, you can die from alcohol withdrawal. So it's a serious situation. So here comes these 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 paragraphs that I think really everybody needs to know, and maybe these should be read at every meeting. It says, we believe, and he's talking about we, the doctor, and so suggested a few years ago that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy. So I have an allergy to alcohol. So Charlie says, how could he have an allergy to something that he could drink so much of? Well, it's an abnormal reaction. It's an abnormal reaction to something. And what happens when you put alcohol in your body is that you get the phenomenon of craving. Now, people say they crave a drink when they're sober. That's not true. You can't crave something unless it's in your body. Now, I have that. If I have one drink, I know I'd want a second one. In fact, if I started to drink again, why would I just want one drink? Would any alcoholic who's starting to drink again just think of one drink? No. If you do, you're not an alcoholic. And you would probably buy 2 bottles. Does that make sense? Because you could run out. And it says it's an allergy, so it's an abnormal reaction. It never occurs in the average temperate drinker. So if you're an alcoholic, you have the phenomenon craving. If you don't have the phenomenon craving, you're not an alcoholic, and you can drink because you can control how much you drink. And so just drink like they say on TV, you know? I love those commercials. Drink whatever it is, wisely or safely or this or that, I never know. The commercials are getting a little bit more outrageous. I saw some guy with a beard and ponytail, and he was walking along the beach, and he was advertising a drink for it's a young man by the pool talking about the new vodka or something and how this would be really good. And I was thinking, well, that's really they're going for a younger clientele. We can never safely use it in any form. You can never safely drink. Does everybody believe that? And once having formed the habit of drinking, they cannot break it. And then when you do that, you lose your self-confidence. Anybody lose their self-confidence? And what self-confidence can you lose that why can't I not drink, and then why can't I control how much I drink? Now, alcoholics feel that they're very special. Have you ever met an alcoholic that wasn't special? And so we think we're all special, so how can we, and we can't understand, and we lose confidence in our special abilities. We all think we're special, but we can't quit drinking. Well, that, there you go, I'm not that special. And so their reliance upon things human and problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve. Anybody believe that? Yeah. Now here's the problem. People come to AA and they stop drinking for a while, and then they think their problems are not piling up. And they think things are going great, so they think they overreacted. Or they'll say, well, I'm sober 3 months and I don't have any fear and I'm not angry and, you know, I'm getting along great with everybody. Well, they're in a dream world because they're getting irritated and restless and discontented all the time, and they don't see it. So frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. That means light in content. I thought it meant foaming at the mouth. But this message, which can interest and hold these alcoholics, must have depth and weight. And I think that's one of the problems with some of the discussion meetings I go to, that there's no message of depth and weight. There's kind of a, they read the daily reflections and then people kind of blather for an hour. But there's not the, and there's nothing wrong with that, but it, what's the message of depth and weight that we're supposed to be giving to the new person? And so that must, you need to think about it when you go to meetings. And you need to think about, can you give a message of depth and weight? And I think the big book has it, and that's why we study it. It says, in nearly all cases, their ideals must be grounded in a power greater than themselves if they are to recreate their lives. Does that sound like a good statement? Yeah, and but what does it mean? It means that my old ideas have to be, my ideas have to be grounded in something new. It can't be what I thought, my old ideas. Remember, the result's nil. So my old ideas must be grounded in God, not in me. That's hard to do. Anybody know how to do it on their own? No, we can't. That's what the steps are all about. And then the steps recreate my life. It's a design for living that works. And what does it recreate? It changes my character. We become, go from self-centered to God-centered. That's a great line. A lot of people read it. They say, boy, that's good. But what does it really mean? It means my ideals must be grounded in a power greater than me, or I'm screwed. Because if they're in a power that's my power, it's the same old thing. Judging, irritable, restless, fear. Anybody have a little fear? Now today I don't get much of that because I stop and I just say that's ridiculous and just get back to God. It's in the next paragraph is that the psychiatrist, why wouldn't you want this to be given to your patients? And when you see the tragedies and the despairing wives of little children and the solving of the problems, repair relationships, why wouldn't you accept and encourage this movement? And it's an altruistic movement now growing up among them, unselfish concern for others. Those listening to the tape, we're having some fun here. We have two little ones here, and they're having a good time, and their mother will be glad when they're 7 and 8, yes. And we're gonna pray for that, we'll pray for that. They're less than 2 and probably 4. All right. Men and women, this is really important. Everybody needs to understand that. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. Now, if you don't like the effect produced by alcohol, you're not going to drink, right? If it made you sick, you wouldn't drink.
I don't know.
All right. Chris, you want to close the door, please? Well, you may vomit, but you like the effect, and then you vomit. So it has to change the way we feel. It has to do something to us that our mind wants it, that our mind wants this effect. And we learned that when we first started drinking. And you could depend on alcohol to change the way you felt. It was dependable. And so your mind said, okay, I don't like the way I feel, I need a drink. Now, you may not say that consciously, but subconsciously, that's what happens. That's the obsession of the mind that he's going to talk about. So not only do we have an allergy that means we can't control how much we drink, but we have this sensation produced by alcohol, and it's so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, so it's injurious when I drink because I can't control how much I drink. They cannot, after a time, differentiate the truth from the false. And I thought about what that means a lot. I'm not sure. It's like scripture, but I think it means you cannot stop doing what you don't want to do. You can't see the truth from the false right before you drink. Anybody have that problem? Anybody drink after they swore they weren't going to? Well, yeah, right before you drank, you couldn't differentiate the truth from the false. Why? Because your mind can't see it, because you can only see what it's going to do for you, not to you. Now, I ask a lot of people, why'd you drink again? Oh, I don't know. Well, they wanted to change the way they felt. It's not that complicated. And your mind seeks that sensation. And why do you want to change the way you feel? Because you're living a life of self-centeredness and separated from God. And when you do that, you get irritable, restless, and discontent. He's going to say that. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. I'm not sure I know what that means either, but it means that we keep doing the same thing over again, and then we get the same results, and it just seems normal after a while, I guess. But they're restless, irritable, discontented. This man could see it, that alcoholics sober. When you're sober without God, you get restless, irritated, and discontented. He could see it. He could see it. And then they would seek the sensation, and it's elusive. And then they would lose control of how much they drank. This was a doctor. He could see it over and over again. And I can remember seeing patients when I was an intern and resident. They kept coming in with pancreatitis and problems from drinking, and they swear they're never going to drink. And then at 3 a.m, in those days, we had to go down to the emergency room and wheel them up, the intern and the student. And I'd say, well, you were here a month ago. You told me you weren't going to drink. What happened? And then I swear this time I'm not going to drink. I won't do it again, doc. I said, well, fine. I didn't understand. Then I went home and drank. it's restless, irritable, and discontented. And that's their normal state. I think that's the problem. Alcoholics, and some people can talk to that, I don't think they can see their restless, irritated, and discontented state, because it's the water you swim in. Yes, two fish, what's water, they don't know. It's they're in it. They can't see it. And I think that's what happens. Sober, without God, and working the steps, you eventually... Remember we had that step zero, which is where you haven't worked any of the steps? And how long can your emotions go before you drink again? And then remember I had that emotional thermometer, and you get restless, irritable, discontent. You don't have God. You haven't worked the steps. You're not drinking. How long can your emotions build up before you drink again? Some people can go years being miserable. But some don't. That's why it says in the book, most don't go a year. Most don't go months. It may be weeks, it may be days. And they're restless, irritated, and discontent unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. So they seek the sense of ease and comfort, and then they drink more than they want to when they start out, because they have the allergy of the body. And then they want that, and they see other people can have a few drinks, but they can't. So here's what he talks about. After they succumb, succumb means to die. You succumb. They say somebody succumbed from cancer or something. They succumb to the desire. It's the desire that you die from. Because the desire tells you you're restless, irritated, discontent. You need the sense of ease and comfort. And you give in to that, even though you know that when you drink, you can't control it. Now, that's insane. And that's the insanity of the disease. The people know it's bad, but they do it anyway, because their mind succumbs to this desire for ease and comfort. So the real problem is that sober people can't live without drinking. They don't have a way of getting ease and comfort. And AA tells you it's very simple. It's with God. With God, all things are possible. God can do for you what you cannot do yourself. God can tell you, bad idea. And when they do this, they pass through the well-known stages of esprit, emerging remorseful. Anybody emerge remorseful? With a firm resolution not to drink again. And they take the FBI lie detector test. And then the wife's happy because they swore the solemn oath and they pass the lie detector test. And then 3 hours later, they're drinking again. I really do think that when people tell me they're never going to drink again, they really mean it. So then they do something that they really mean to never do, and they can't remember that they really meant that they were never going to do it again. They can't recall. The book says you cannot recall to sufficient force the humiliation and defeat of a week, month, year, I say 5 minutes, maybe a moment. And that's what happens, and that's addiction. And so it's alcoholic addiction relieves it, if it's heroin, if it's sex, if it's food. I have a lot of people listen to the podcast, you're an Overeaters Anonymous, they send me comments, they appreciate it. It works for any spiritual malady, the 12 steps. And it really works for people who believe in the Lord or are devout religious people. I had lunch with the minister and this other man, and he was telling me, it's funny, that he doesn't think that they should have a separate woman's Bible study without being monitored. So I said, well, who told you that was a good idea? Well, he thinks they need to be monitored. I said, well, who told you that? And you don't think God could take care of the women, right? And that they need to be monitored, and that you know how it should be done, you get it? Alcoholism—it's the ism, and so they were laughing. And then the minister said something about, you know, time is relative, and it's only really in the moment. I said, "Yeah, God's only in the moment because you bring in resentment and fear." He said, "Wow," and so I've got them reading the big book now. I said, "Start on page 45 and see if you're in there." And it's for everybody, because the original book said we carry this message to others, especially alcoholics. Remember, this book was written by Christians who wanted to practice Christianity as the apostles preached it in the first century. So anyway, it says, repeat it over and over. Anybody do this? Unless the person can experience an entire psychic change, there's little hope. Now, we talk about going to meetings and keep coming back, and it works if you work at all this other stuff that sounds great. But you have to change your whole personality. And if you don't change your personality, which is what? How I react to what I see. How I react to what I think. Now, today, when I think in Michael, I can see that it's wrong. When I get fear or judgment, it's wrong. And so I don't want to react in that anymore. Remember, it talks about you're recovered when you react when you're in a fit spiritual condition. So the goal of AA is to get you in fit spiritual condition. Well, somebody say, what the heck does that mean? Well, it means that you're connected to God and you're seeking God all day long, and you're watching for your thinking for when you leave God. And then if your thinking's leaving God, you stop and say, God, I need to get back to you, change the way I see things. It's that simple. But if you don't have God and you don't have that relationship and you don't have that trust, you're not used to doing it, you're going to keep doing the same thing over and over again. You're going to build up your resentments, which is judgment. Anybody have judgment? And it's always wrong. Fear, anybody have fear, which is belief, which is never true because it's not in the moment. And then you keep seeking the ease and comfort of alcohol. But here's the key thing. On the other hand, strange as this may seem, and I'll shut up after this, once a psychic change has occurred, once it's occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems, he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol. Isn't that great? Anybody want that? Well, here's the warning. The only effort necessary being that required to follow a few simple rules. Now, here's the key. It can't be your rules. It's got to be somebody else's rules. And the rules in this book are called steps. But if you don't follow them, you're not going to get the result. So I think this is really, really great stuff. How this man put it together in these words is really, can't be read enough, can't be discussed enough. So we're going to play with the kids now, and we're going to open it up for people to talk. And I hope it was helpful. Thank you.